Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Isaac Newton Institute podcast. My name is Dan Aspel. I'm the communications manager here at INI, and this time I'm joined by Professor Svitlana Mybaroda.
Thank you very much.
It's lovely to be here with you, Svitlana. Svitlana, you're here attending the ASC program, which you're going to have to help me out here. It's approximation, sampling, and compression in data science.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. And that's been running throughout the first half of 2019. You are here. You're not only a participant in the program, but you are also the Kirk Fellow for the program. So it's a doubly a pleasure to have you with us. Can you just give us a little introduction to yourself? Tell us about yourself a little.
Yes, I'm positioned in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota. It's been 8 years, 7, 8 years over there. And before that, I was a professor at Purdue University, also in Midwest in the United States. Mm-hmm. Had several postdocs in between, and even before, graduated from the University of Missouri. Columbia, Missouri. And originally I'm from Ukraine, so my undergraduate education in particular is in Kharkiv, Ukraine.
So what attracted you to studying in the US and then eventually working in the US?
Well, quite frankly, an adventure. I wasn't really planning it in a big way, neither the career in mathematics nor living in the United States. But somehow, through some conversations with the professors in analysis in particular, I got information about the opportunity to be there, that they're hiring for a graduate school, and got a lot of encouragement from my professors. So I went for it, but mainly sort of like people go to the moon without really... considering it as a big career move or big move in any other way, quite frankly. I was 19, so it was
just
a wild gesture in some sense.
If you'd known that it would lead to a career and a life living in the US, would you make the same choice again?
Certainly, but I also have to admit that at that point, I did not really know what the career in mathematics means, so I wouldn't probably be able to make this choice. So maybe it was safer sort of rolling this way than making it a conscious choice.
So what if you hadn't been a professional mathematician, what would you have been? If we ask 19-year-old,
it's actually very hard to say. You know, Ukraine of those days was a very complicated place. It's actually, she's in part now. So probably academia was not really on the table. But I haven't really seriously thought about the career choices at that point yet.
Well, it's a happy place to find yourself,
absolutely.
This adventure, even if it's, you know, by accident.
And absolutely. So it's a wonderful life, and I'm certainly very happy to be a mathematician.
And tell us about the program, which I realize is a difficult question because you aren't an organizer of the program, but you are a major participant in it. Tell us about what's happening and what has happened in the ASC program. What's for an audience like myself, who's not a mathematician, what's the program been about?
So there is a good portion of it in approximation and sampling and, which stems from the field of mathematics called harmonic analysis, which is one of my primary specialties, which basically has to do with decomposing a given function or process into small pieces in an intelligent way, which both makes it simple to analyze and simple to collect the data from the beginning. This is where the word harmonic analysis in some sense come from, harmonics as in musical harmonics, as you decompose the sound into notes.
We're sitting here speaking at the moment with a laptop and a rather sizable microphone in between us, and I'm guessing that the kind of, on a very basic level, the stuff that we're talking about here relates to what the machine is doing in front of us now.
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's the case. And of course, as the data science becomes more and more prominent part of our lives, as the computers acquire huge storage capacities and the processing of this information becomes a bigger and bigger challenge, the corresponding questions come to light, and in particular the questions analyzed in this program. I'm probably somewhat more on a well, theoretical side would be wrong to say. There are a lot of people here who are in the theoretical science, but sort of on a classical harmonic analysis side, combined with the partial differential equations, which is my area of primary interest. So I'm a little bit tangential to some questions considered here, but definitely in this or the other way, the ideas coming from the harmonic analysis are present through all the aspects of the program.
And what brought you personally to harmonic analysis? Was it that it was a part of maths that particularly spoke to you for whatever reason?
Well, yet again, quite frankly, I don't have a fancy story common with it. I mean, it's sort of a random sequence of events of choosing an advisor and so on. I still, you know, rightfully or wrongfully think that a lot of the things are sort of random chance. There are very few kids who actually know what research in mathematics means, and very few who have a very clear idea in graduate school of what they actually want to do. So the university where I ended up was particularly strong in the field of harmonic analysis. There were quite a few professors who have been really outstanding in this field, so it was a reasonably natural choice. It's also tied up in my particular research with partial differential equations, which are main mathematical models of the physical phenomena and many other phenomena, and that appealed to me at the time. And to this date, I collaborate with physicists, and my research is quite closely related to questions coming from physics.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. Is it? It must be quite satisfying to. I mean, physics is, it generally tends to be something that the mind of the public can relate to more readily than pure and more abstract mathematics. So what kind of things have you been working with physicists on?
So our huge today's project is devoted to localization of eigenfunctions. And it combines at least 10 mathematicians and physicists in different universities in different parts of the globe. Actually, one of them here in Cavendish Lab, Sir Richard Friend from organic semiconductors. But also there are quite a few others in Paris and University of California, Santa Barbara, back in the United States at MIT, University of Minnesota. So the project is at large devoted to the phenomenon called localization of waves, which basically means that in the complex geometry, in a room of a very strange shape, for example, it could be that the sound localizes, meaning that you speak in one corner of the room and the person in the other corner does not actually hear you.
Yes, I've seen ceilings like that.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And believe it or not, despite the fact that it has been observed and incorporated in engineering constructions for a long, long time, this phenomenon is still not completely understood. And it percolates a lot of areas of physics. In particular, right now, it's very relevant in quantum physics as the matter can be viewed as waves. And there are different manifestations of localization, such as, for example, Anderson localization by disorder, for which Anderson got a Nobel Prize in physics, which basically means localization of quantum waves in a disordered material. But also there are many in between, and this is at large the center of our interest, both on mathematical and physical side.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. I mean, from an average person's point of view, it's really interesting to hear that something that I can physically experience is yet to be fully explained.
Most definitely you do. I mean, in part, LEDs, semiconductors built this way, at least some of them, and definitely acoustic waves are subject to that. And, you know, the noise abatement walls work this way as well. If you really look at them, they are not necessarily thick, but more so complex. I mean, if you could just build an efficient wall by making it 20 times thicker, that's what you would see around the highways.
Sure.
But what you actually see if you look at it is a a rather complex structure, and it turns out that it's that complexity that traps the waves. And optimizing that complexity somehow, both from the point of view of mathematics giving the best results, but also from the point of view of engineering reality, actually being able to build the material with such properties is a big challenge.
Yeah, and the thought occurred as you were speaking just then that there are, with as with all areas of mathematics, the applications or the potential applications of this understanding are often so far removed perhaps from what one might assume. It's interesting to see how it sort of percolates into design of materials, for example.
Right. I mean, I have to tell you quite frankly that I feel more lucky than, you know, within the role, having been able to see applications that fast. I mean, it really has been extraordinary to see the results of what we have found out mathematically in engineering constructions share, I don't know, 2 years after the discovery. That's somewhat rare. But all this being said, quite frankly, it's still the interest in mathematics of it that drives me. Even in the middle of collaboration with physicists, I often go back to my corner and just prove theorems for the sheer pleasure of proving theorems, which I still find extraordinarily beautiful and satisfying, whether or not they have applications. It's just sort of an art in itself.
No, that's a wonderful thing to say. And do you think all mathematicians on that basis, do you think all mathematicians have it equal? Do you think that no matter what specialty you're in, you've still got that joy of the purity of whatever it is that you're working on?
I would say so. I mean, it's true that, you know, everybody driven by his or her own reasons into mathematics, but most definitely for most of us, it's really the beauty of the result by itself, the absolute truth behind it, which drives us, and which, as I said, is extraordinarily satisfying somehow, no matter if it has applications or not. It's just a pure pleasure of the beauty of it.
Yeah, that's wonderfully put. Thank you for sharing. To change tack ever so slightly, we mentioned at the beginning that you are the Kirk Fellow for the ASC program. Now, it's easy to look up, and I'll include a link in the description here to what the Kirk Fellowship is. Essentially, it's a fund to support a mathematician on each program hosted at the INI, and the stipulation is that they should be from an underrepresented group. And of the five so far, they have all been women. Because women, we can give statistics to support this for hours, but women are underrepresented in mathematics, and it's not that there are not enough brilliant women, it is that they do not make up 50% of the higher positions within the science. Now, that aside, how do you feel about being made the Kirk Fellow for the programme?
I'm definitely very honored to be here in this capacity. I think this makes a huge difference. I'm surprised and honored to be one of the first. I know. I think I'm one of
the first. Yes, it is the first year.
Kirk
exactly.
Fellows,
yeah,
actually. Yeah. I felt that there is a public lecture which comes with the Kirk Fellowship, which I also felt was an extremely rewarding experience with the true interest from a lot of people, actually, not only from the approximation program, but across the institute. I think it's a fantastic development. I'm very honored to be one of the first on board of it. And yes, thank you.
I'm glad that you feel that way. And obviously, we look forward to it continuing. And hopefully helping to highlight the brilliant women in the science. It's an interesting topic. We were discussing it just before we started recording about the attitude that some might have to it. Some might feel that it's fine to single out women and give them an award for underrepresented groups. Others might feel that actually everyone should be considered as a mathematician and ignore that. But we can't avoid the fact that that women are not given the platform, perhaps within the science, that by all accounts and by every measure that they should have. Do you have any thoughts about that at all?
Well, as said, I'm honored and happy to be a part of it. It's true that women do not make up 50% of the professors' pool, and the numbers are even more aggravated at the highest levels. I mean, if you already, if you look at the level of full professors at sort of top, I don't know, 25, 50 institutions, it's going to be much worse. And if you really look at the top few in the world, the numbers are going to be at the level of 1-2 per department. I mean, depending on the size of departments, but the situation is really critical there. What can I say? Well, there is a bag of mixed feelings, of course, which comes with it. Quite frankly, as for me, I tend to not overthink it in the sense that I'm happy to be the Kirk Fellow in this program. And I mean, I really think that there are so many outstanding women as well that this is already a huge pool of competition. I really do think that it is important to support women in general. And in particular, I mean, I have participated, organized a lot of things for younger generation, and I'm very happy to see that the situation is changing. Not, of course, only due to my efforts, but the situation is changing in general, and the only way it can be done is with the conscious effort in this direction. It just, if there is no conscious effort, if there are no awards specifically designed to highlight the minorities, if there is no conscious effort to at least look at the minority files during the hiring and so on, there will be still no result, because I mean there are numerous studies, as you mentioned, of explicit and implicit bias and things like this. So there must be introduced some sort of a conscious effort in this direction. So I'm hopeful that eventually it will even out and such efforts will not be needed. But at this point, I'm happy to be part of them, and I'm very happy that younger generation is in much better shape than probably we were, and definitely we already were in a much better shape than the generation of mathematicians before us.
Well, that was fascinating to hear and really interesting, so thank you very much for sharing those thoughts. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you, as the ASC program is drawing to a close as we record this, what lies ahead for you? Because there's a workshop this week, and then I believe the end of next week ASC wraps up. So what is next on your agenda?
There is still quite a bit of summer travel. I briefly go back to Ukraine, to my home country, for both mathematical and non-mathematical reasons. And then I go to Leiden in Netherlands for the EquaDIF 2019 conference, which is sort of one of the big yearly events in partial differential equations. And then hopefully finally home, because it's been already almost 2 months of travel. So quite frankly, I'm sort of happy to have a chance to go home and do some math in my own corner, which is what I have mentioned before.
Sure. Yeah, that seems to be a recurring theme when we interview the various academics that come to the Institute. Of course, by definition, two-thirds, I think, of the participants here aren't based in the UK, so, and even the ones based in the UK, it's often travel to come to Cambridge, so it's exciting to enjoy it vicariously through you.
Right, I have to say that right here in the Newton Institute here, I mean, it has been the incredible opportunity to actually talk to people, to collaborate with people. I mean, this is probably the primary way for mathematicians to collaborate, because it lets you stay somewhere for an elongated period of time to work with the colleagues for more than 2 days in the conference between the talks. And even when visiting in colleagues at other institutions, it's much more difficult because, again, longer visits are typically hard with the teaching schedule and administrative duties and everything else. And also people who are at home are actually still tied up as people who are at home. So it sort of introduces some always uneven balance It's still not both you and your collaborator being completely disengaged from administrative and activities and students and things like this. So it's a really unique, very nice way to do mathematics. It really pushes our research in many ways, and we are grateful for an opportunity.
Well, as far as I'm aware, that is exactly the intention at the Institute, so it's great to hear that it's exactly your experience. So yes, Svetlana, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me, and it's been a pleasure speaking to you in return. I wish you all the best for the rest of the programme and for the exciting travels ahead, and thanks once more.
Thank you so much. Thank you.